Well, I don't expect you sang Psalm 59 very many times before, but we'll see tonight, as Mark read it at the beginning, it's connected. It was written in the light of the matters that we're coming to consider tonight. So turn with me to 1 Samuel and chapter 19. 1 Samuel and chapter 19. Good thing about making your way through the Bible or through somebody's life is that you have to deal with these interesting chapters, and that's what we come to this evening. So 1 Samuel chapter 19. David is discovering, isn't he, that being the Lord's anointed isn't turning out to be the easiest of tasks. Perhaps when Samuel had anointed him earlier, it had seemed quite exciting. What's God got in store for me? Well, he's killed Goliath and he's delivered the people of Israel from possible slavery to the Philistines. We saw last week how he's acted wisely in all his ways. But it hadn't led to a life of ease and prosperity for him, had it? I mean, Jonathan loves him, and the people of Israel love him too. But Saul, well, that's a different matter altogether, isn't it? Saul is filled with jealous suspicion of him. And he's already tried to kill him with a spear, and he's already tried to get him finished off by the Philistines. And in this chapter before us this evening, it sort of develops and gets worse until by the end of this chapter, David is basically living as a fugitive. He's on the run, and is so for a number of years. It is not an easy time at all. And yet all that time, he enjoys the Lord's protection. All that time, though many times his life seems to be in the balance, he's safe. At the beginning of the next chapter, in chapter 20 and verse 3, David says to Jonathan, there is but a step between me and death. I mean, he seems to be on the edge of death the whole time, and yet no one can cross that step until and unless God allows it. He's in God's hands. We've sang, didn't we? Plagues and deaths around me fly. Till he bids, I cannot die. Not a single shaft can hit. Till the God of love sees fit. I mean, David would have sung that, I'm sure, wouldn't he? So we come to this chapter. I mean, as ever, you know, it's with these things that seem so earthy and, you know, physical, spears being chucked about, jumping out of windows, we need to remember the spiritual battle going on behind it. David is the Lord's anointed. And he's from his line, from his seed, the Savior of the world is going to come. The crusher of the serpent is going to come. And so he's hugely blessed and privileged in that way, but he's also in the eye of Satan, isn't he? There's a spiritual battle going on. Satan wants to bring him down, doesn't he? So we need to remember that spiritual battle that's going on. And, of course, the evil one doesn't win. I don't think there's any spoilers needed there. We've read our New Testaments. The line is kept. The Savior comes. Satan is defeated. But he's still on the prowl, isn't he? And who's he after now? Well, he's after the Lord's people, isn't he? And as we trust the Lord and follow him, we shouldn't be surprised to find that we know something of his attacks and his wiles. And yet we can have the same confidence as David, that in the midst of it all, the Lord will keep us. The Lord will have his hand upon us and protect us. And then when his work is finished in us and through us, we'll be taken safely to glory. So let's think about two things tonight. We're going to think about Saul's hatred and humiliation, and then we're going to think about the Lord's grace and glory. So first of all, Saul's hatred and humiliation. First of all, his hatred. I mean, he really is full of hatred in this chapter, isn't he? The first thing we can say about this hatred is that it becomes an open hatred. So in the last chapter, It was hidden to some extent, wasn't it? Now, I know that you might think, well, it wasn't very hidden. He threw a spear at David. I mean, that's fairly not very subtle. But we saw, didn't we, that it's sort of put down to one of Saul's episodes. He's got this distressing spirit. Don't take it personally, David. And David doesn't actually take it personally at that point, does he? But there's this sort of, he's plotting, isn't he? He's scheming, trying to get the Philistines to kill off David instead. So it's sort of under the radar, isn't it? But not anymore. Not anymore. As this chapter opens, look, chapter 19, verse 1, he tells Jonathan and all his servants that they should kill David. It's out in the open, isn't it now? I mean, perhaps that's a reminder to us that you might be able to hide your opposition to Jesus and keep it hidden for a while, but it comes out, doesn't it, eventually? It comes out in all sorts of different ways in people's lives. So it's an open hatred. It's an undeserved hatred, isn't it? So that, as I say, the chapter begins by Saul saying to Jonathan and his servants that they should kill David. And so Jonathan, who loves David, warns him, tells him to hide, and then takes Saul out to where he is and reminds his father of how undeserving David was of his hatred and murderous intentions. Let me just read verses 4 and 5 again. That Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he's not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you. For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistines. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. And you saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So those words remind a reminder of the fact that David doesn't deserve anything of Saul's hatred. In fact, he deserves his kindness, doesn't he? And he deserves his praise. I mean, David's done a lot for him. And saved the kingdom, killed his enemies. Of course, Saul is jealous, isn't he? And to some extent, knew that David had done what he should have done. I said that last week. Who should have gone out and killed Goliath? The king should have done that. He hadn't done it. David has had to stand in for him. And now he's filled with envy and with hatred. It's undeserved. And then, of course, we'll note in a moment that he relents for a little bit of time. But then, what brings it on again? What arouses his hatred again? Is it some scheming from David? Is it some plotting that he discovers that David's doing against him? Is it some sin that David commits? No. It's actually further loyalty. Look at verse 8 of our chapter. It tells us that once there was war again. David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. So what have we got in that verse? We've got a mighty blow, or we've got being struck and fleeing. Look down two verses. You've got trying to be struck and fleeing again. David sought to pin David with a spear to the wall, but he slipped away and he fled. So once again, David's gone out. It's undeserved hatred, isn't it? Utterly undeserved. And that's true of the world's hatred of Jesus and of God, isn't it? It's opposition. It's utterly undeserved. God deserves our love and our thanks. I mean, all around us are signs of God's goodness and God's mercy. If you're here tonight and you're still rejecting Jesus Christ, then note this, it's in, even though he's full of kindness and love and mercy, your life is full of his blessings. He deserves your love and your allegiance. It's totally undeserved hatred. Another application before we move on. I mean, we're reminded here of what envy can lead to. We can find ourselves with a bitter, hateful thoughts towards other people. Well, I mentioned this last week, but I feel like I should mention it again, that we can be envious of other people's gifts, other people's circumstances, other people's blessings. Sometimes we can be provoked because other people are doing what we ought to be doing. And our consciences are pricked, and instead of being humbled, we begin to get angry, or we think of some way that, oh, they're not doing it right, or they're not quite, although they ought to be. And it can easily get in our hearts. I feel that that's a warning we need, don't we? We constantly need that warning. Don't let resentment, don't let bitterness go up in our hearts. So it's an open hatred, it's an undeserved hatred, it's an unpredictable hatred as well, isn't it? I mean, this envious, hateful spirit has a hold on Saul. So for a while, we see, don't we, that when, verse 6, when Jonathan speaks to Saul, Saul sees that David doesn't deserve any such actions or thoughts. And so he makes an oath, doesn't he? As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed, he says. That's an oath before the Lord. David returns home for a while and everything seems to be all right. But it's not long again, is it, before he's gripped by this hatred again and throws a spear at David and then sends his KGB round to kill him in his home. And that change, you see that in, we'll see that again in Saul's life. There'll be other times when David could have killed Saul and he doesn't. And Saul is shamefaced and he says, oh, I was wrong, forgive me, and off he goes. But then again, he's caught in it. Then again, he's after David. It's unpredictable. And often, hatred and anger are like that, aren't they? They're unreasonable. There's no logic to it. It's just an anger, and it grips somebody, and it takes over somebody. Another warning to us. Don't let anger dwell in your heart. Don't let bitterness dwell in your heart. It can consume you. It becomes unreasonable, unpredictable, takes over. And then another thing about this hatred is it's cruel. I mean, it would be, we mustn't miss this. I mean, it's not just cruel to David. It's not just that he's going to hurt David, who's done him no wrong, but think of his own family. He's thinking of killing his own son's best friend, who he loves like his own brother. And then he's, I mean, who's David married to? Saul's daughter. Who loves him, we read in the last chapter. So this hatred, if he carries out what he wants to carry out, his own son and his own daughter are going to be heartbroken about it as well. And yet, that's what hatred's like when it gets hold of you, when it takes over you. Never mind what impact it will have on anybody else, even on people that you love. I mean, how many families in this village and this county and this country are torn apart and destroyed by envy and bitterness and jealousy and something that's got in and that person won't let it go and it's affected the whole family and nobody's able to meet and nobody's able to talk because of this thing. I even know of Christian families where that sort of thing gets hold. So we need to be aware of that and the power of hatred. And I want to remind you tonight, we've sort of broken in on the story of dealing with the life of David, so we missed the first part of the life of Saul. And it's just worth us noting that Saul didn't start out like this. There's a story earlier on, back in 1 Samuel 11, where Saul had been chosen as king. You might know the story or be reminded of it. And the Lord's hand is upon him, and he saves the people of Jabesh-Gilead. And he gets a mighty victory. And at the end of the battle, some of the people who are with him want to put to death some of the people who've been speaking against Saul. There were some people who were saying, Saul's no king. He's not got a kingliness about him. We don't want him as... And they were speaking... And when Saul wins this great victory, some of his people go, well, let's go and sort those people out who said that. And look at chapter 11, verse 13. Well, let me move us verse 20. But then the people said to Samuel, who is it who said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring them men that we may put them to death. But Saul said, not a man shall be put to death this day. For the Lord, today the Lord has accomplished salvation in Israel. Do you see that? So the Saul back then had prevented that from happening. That was a wise moment. That was a gracious moment from Saul. But he's a different man now. He's been disobedient to the Lord. He's hardened his heart. He's let bitterness get in. And he's a very different man. So there's a warning for us all tonight. You might all look lovely. You all are, I'm sure. But you let bitterness in. You let anger in. You let jealousy in. And it can change you. So Saul's hatred and Saul's humiliation. This hatred is so futile, isn't it? It's surely becoming apparent to Saul that in fighting against David, he is fighting against the Lord. I mean, this becoming clear. Back in chapter 18 and verse 12, it said Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and had departed from Saul. It was clear to Saul that was the case. I mean, Saul knew that. The Lord was with David. In fighting against David, he's fighting against the Lord. And it's foolishness. And you can't win. But he won't give up. So when David escapes to Samuel, Saul sends these three lots of messengers, doesn't he, to take David. And each one of them, as they arrive, it's sort of taken over, aren't they, by the Spirit of God in some way and prophesy and are rendered powerless. Each one of them, each group comes up and something comes upon them, doesn't it? And they can't do what they set out to do. And then, you know, Saul goes, well, you know, if you wanted a job done, you better do it yourself. And so he heads off as well. I mean, he should have realized, shouldn't he? This is not going to happen, Saul. And then Saul himself is humiliated, isn't he? He's stopped. And he's taken over on the way. And he prophesies and strips off naked, and he's naked for the day and the night. Now, you all want me to explain that prophecy, don't you, and all that was going on? And I don't know. We're not told any details, are we? Which means we don't need to know, and we don't need to spend a lot of time on it. But the clear thing is, the Lord's protecting David, isn't he? The Lord's stopping these people. They've come to take David. They've come to kill David, and they can't do it. And Saul is utterly humiliated. You know, you can't fight against the Lord. Psalm 2 pictures, doesn't it? The nations raging and plotting against the Lord. Actually, that same theme is picked up, isn't it, in our psalm, in that psalm, Psalm 59, that Mark read, that's connected with this. The nations raging, plotting, but God laughing at it. You know, it's just foolishness to think that you can overcome the Lord. There's only one thing to do, isn't there, in the face of the Lord, and that's to bow before him and submit to him and trust him. Surrender your life to him. So we've got Saul's hatred and humiliation. It's a warning to us. Then we've got God's grace and glory. So God's grace is displayed in his protection of David. David enjoys the protection of the Almighty. That doesn't mean he doesn't have any trials. Indeed, the fact that he's central in God's purposes means that he's going to have more trials than most. But in those trials, he'll know the Lord's protection. So turn to that psalm. I'm not going to talk about it all, but Psalm 59. Psalm 59. So there it is at the beginning. I'd like the sound of this tune, Do Not Destroy. I reckon that would be a good tune, wouldn't it? It's there at the beginning. So that little bit at the beginning is part of the inspired text. So a Mishum of David, when Saul sent men and they watched the house in order to kill him. So this is. I mean, I don't know whether he wrote it while he was hiding in the cupboard or something. But he certainly wrote it in the light of all that happened. And in the psalm, David cries out for the Lord's help. He lays the situation before the Lord. He calls on the Lord to deliver him. He calls on the Lord to defeat his enemies. I mean, it's quite a striking psalm, isn't it? And he speaks about God in this psalm. He speaks about the Lord being his refuge. And verse 9, his strength, his defense or his fortress. Verse 11, his shield, the Lord our shield. So the one who protects him, the one who looks after him, the one who cares for him, who delivers him from his enemies. That's who he's crying out to. And that's what the Lord does in this chapter. He delivers him. And there's a wonderful variety in the way that the Lord does it, in this little chapter. So first of all, what does he use, first of all? Well, back in our chapter, he uses the words of a friend to save him. So Jonathan speaks to Saul, as we've seen, on his behalf, and for a while at least turns away Saul's wrath. It's a wonderful thing. It's just a wonderful that those words from Jonathan. I mean, we said last week, Jonathan, on paper, should have been David's arch enemy. David has been anointed the next king by the Lord. Jonathan's naturally the next king. I mean, they should have been enemies. Jonathan should have hated David. But he loves him. He can see that he is the Lord's anointed. And he's willing to bow. We saw last week, didn't we, that wonderful picture of how he hands over his robe and all his armor and his weapons to David. And he's saying, you're the one. And here's that continued, isn't it? As he stands for David, he speaks for David, and he urges his father, look what David's done. And look what David's like. He doesn't deserve that. And the Lord uses that to protect David at the beginning of the chapter. Let me make some application from that for a moment. First of all, when people speak against Jesus, our anointed, we're to stand up for him. I think we can make that application tonight. We're to speak for him. We're to talk of what he's done and what he's like and how worthy he is of praise. When people blaspheme the name of Jesus and mock him, We ought to be ready to be like a Jonathan and say, now look here. Jesus deserves better than that. I mean, we were thought last Sunday morning, didn't we, of Peter's denial of Jesus. And in a sense, Jonathan's words are like a contrast to that. Well, Peter, on that occasion, was embarrassed about Jesus and pretended he didn't know Jesus. Here's Jonathan with the Lord's anointed saying, now, come on. Think of what he's done. Think of what he's accomplished. Think of what he's like. I find that a challenge tonight. In this world, we live in a world, aren't we, where Jesus is mocked and ridiculed. Certainly we as a church together should be standing for Jesus and speaking of his worth. And we should be doing that individually as well. And then perhaps another application is, this wonderful picture of Jonathan as a peacemaker. Jesus said, didn't he? Blessed are the peacemakers. Trying to bring peace. I mean, that's our calling, isn't it? Between brothers and sisters. So, that's the first thing the Lord uses. He uses the words of a friend to protect him. And God often does that with David. He uses his servants to protect him. He uses his friends to protect him. And David sees that. He sees the hand of God in that. That was the Lord protecting me. And we should be ready to see that as well when our brothers and sisters help us, come alongside us. It's the Lord. They're the Lord's help. Then we also see God using the cunning of his wife to deliver him. So having once again failed to pin David to the wall with his spear, Saul sends his thugs around, doesn't he, to lie in wait for David and come out of his house in the morning and to kill him. And Michal obviously gets wind of this, doesn't she, in verse 11, and warns David. And tells him if he doesn't get away at night, he'll be dead in the morning. And so Michal lets, it's all very exciting, isn't it? David down from the window, and he flees for his life. And then to try and buy him a bit more time, she arranges the bed to make it look like it's, you know, somebody's in it, and a bit of goat's hair for the hair. Some of you wouldn't need that, would you? You just don't know what you'd use, but she uses goat hair to, you know, make it look like he's in there. And then when they come round, she says he's sick. So they go away, and then they're sent back, aren't they? Bring him in his bed, and I'll kill him. And then she says another lie, doesn't she? When Saul's angry with her, and she says, "Well, if I hadn't have done it, he'd have killed me." Well, it gave David some time to get away, didn't it? Now, was she right to lie? Oh, that's a difficult one, isn't it? I think we should probably say she wasn't right to lie, but it's not black and white, is it? I don't think. When there's a more wicked sin, when there's a wicked man trying to take a life. Some Christians had that in the war, didn't they, with hiding Jews. What's the right thing to do there? Well, difficult. Rahab lied, didn't she, when she hid the spies? And yet she's commended for her faith in hiding the spies. It's a messy world sometimes, isn't it? I'm sure that we can debate that afterwards. But the Lord uses her, doesn't he? That's the point I want to make tonight. The Lord uses her and her cunning to help David escape. He gets out the window and his life is spared. So it's her quick actions. It's David's getting away. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because in Psalm 59, David's while he's in the house, as it were, waiting for the men to attack, with the men outside, he cries out to the Lord to deliver him. But that doesn't mean, does it, that David's just got to sit there and wait and see what happens. I mean, he's got to use this initiative as well. He's got to. So when Michael suggests, why don't you get out of the window and flee? I mean, he sees that as the Lord's protection, and off he goes. So the Lord uses his friend's words and his wife's cunning, we could say. And then he uses direct divine intervention, I think, doesn't he, in the last bit. When Saul sends these three groups of men to take him, and the Spirit comes upon them and they begin to prophesy and they're stopped in their tracks. That's the Lord's intervention. Nobody else really is involved in that, are they? So we see the variety of the way that Lord helps and protects and looks after, and yet they're all equally his. One commentator puts it like this: the means of deliverance must not eclipse the source of deliverance. Ultimately, it's the Lord, isn't it? Using different people, his own ways to protect his anointed. And there's a wonderful irony, isn't there, in this protection? That isn't it God showing that he's on the throne, he's in control? Here's Saul trying to get David and kill David, and yet God uses his own family Saul's own family to protect him. As if he's saying to Saul, you never mind ruling the nation. You're not even sovereign over your own family, and I'm going to use them to protect my anointed, who's your enemy. And we're going to be faced with that many times in the chapters to come. The Lord's servant preserved, wonderful deliverances, escapes, wonderful sovereign overrulings of circumstances and events. And that's our comfort, isn't it, as well? That the Lord watches over us as his people. He's our keeper, he's our protector, he's our refuge, he's our strength. We can look to him and find help and strength from him. And whereas Saul's hatred leads to humiliation, well, that is true of Satan's hatred leading to humiliation as well, but Saul's hatred leading to humiliation, so God's grace leads to his glory. Because what does David want to do when the Lord delivers him? What does he want to do when he sees the Lord's hand protecting him and guiding him and keeping him safe? Well, he wants to praise the Lord, doesn't he? How does Psalm 59 finish? I mean, There's some strange bits in it, isn't there, in Psalm 59, but the ending is wonderful. But I will, verse 16 of Psalm 59, but I will sing of your power. Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. For you have been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. To you, O my strength, I will sing praises. For God is my defense, my God of mercy. That's how it ends. This chapter ends with God being glorified. This psalm ends with God being praised for his grace and his goodness and his glory. And that's got to be our end too, isn't it? As we think of God's care and protection and kindness to us, saving us, keeping us, watching over us. We say, we sing your praise. We rejoice in you, our strength, our God, our help, our defense, my God of mercy. That's our hope tonight, isn't it? And the days to come. We have a sovereign protector who keeps us and watches over us and has his hand upon us.